Welcome to Improve Veterinary Education. I'm Gemma, a veterinary surgeon and UK content editor. And today I'm joined by my colleague, Aidan McClendon, European specialist in small animal surgery and our academic and content director here at Improve Veterinary Education. Aidan, can you tell us a little bit about your journey, how you went from specialist surgery into a role that shapes other vets and how they learn?
Yeah, sure, Gemma. So I qualified from University College Dublin just over 20 years ago now. You're making me feel quite old with this question. And I guess like many new graduates, I started my career in a very busy but traditional mixed veterinary practice. And it was an amazing experience. I had some super mentors there that took me under their wing and provided that very much needed guidance and reassurance in those early days. Despite coming into veterinary from an equine background, I quickly developed a passion for small animal surgery. And ultimately this led to me moving to a dedicated companion animal practice and pivotively made the decision to sign up to a postgraduate certificate in small animal surgery. Ultimately this consolidated my aim to follow this path and led to me pursuing a formal ECVS residency training program back at my alma mater, UCD. So this exposed me to education through the training received from mentors across a range of different disciplines. And because as residents, we were highly involved with teaching of final year veterinary students on clinical rotation, I found my second passion in life. So on completion of my residency and becoming board certified back in 2011, I became a faculty member at UCD and became more and more involved with undergraduate education. And I learned a lot around curriculum development, instructional design, assessment, feedback, and so on. Several years later, I made the decision to return to private referral practice, largely for clinical reasons. But I really missed the teaching and found that left a huge void. So I was very fortunate to be given the opportunity to get involved in the postgraduate education space, designing and delivering postgraduate certificates, both in surgery and in emergency practice. And I honestly found this really rewarding. You know, I loved the fact that the vets coming on the programs were so enthusiastic, so invested, and the knowledge and the skills that I was sharing with them could be applied immediately to their clinical practice. Over those years, I formed lots and lots of great relationships and heard back from many vets who kept in touch over the years, sharing about how the various different courses helped them grow in confidence and ultimately brought them greater joy and satisfaction from their work. So over those years, I very much found time to do that alongside full-time clinical specialist work. And I enjoyed every minute and every opportunity to travel somewhere new, to teach somewhere new. And ultimately that journey led me to Improve, where I'd been teaching programs for Improve over many years. But about 2.5 years ago, the opportunity arose to join Improve Veterinary Education as academic director, where my remit now is really to ensure that our course portfolio is relevant, it's innovative, and engaging to meet the evolving needs of our profession.
Thanks for that, Aidan. I think a lot of vets will relate to parts of your journey. Myself, I'm interested that you come from an equine background, and it's really interesting hearing how your clinical experience ties into what we're going to talk about today. So we're going to talk about and explore the big shift in veterinary postgraduate education that we're moving into now, one that's all about preparing vets for the realities of practice. And it's a really exciting move away from the traditional learning methods that many of us will have been used to.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I share your excitement, and I'm genuinely very excited about our new small animal medicine and small animal soft tissue surgery programs that are launching later this year in November. So we've really rethought not just what we teach, but how we teach it, with the real focus being on building confident, capable clinicians who can adapt to the increasingly unpredictable nature of veterinary practice as it is today.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's set the scene. Most of us will remember a lot of long form lectures, note taking, maybe the occasional practical day forming part of our training if we were lucky. Certainly myself at university, that was the case. But these new programs really turn that on its head. Instead of long lectures and passive learning, they're about active participation, making decisions, solving problems, and getting feedback that you can act on. And what's really exciting is they've been redesigned with huge input from vets in our own improved team. So it's not just theory, it's learning built by vets for vets with the realities of practice in mind. And we all know how much pressure there is on vets' time. So both certificates have been redesigned as 12-month programs, giving full postgraduate qualification in a much more condensed format that's flexible and fits alongside the demands of real practice. So if you compare this new approach to the training you received yourself, as you've described in your journey, what elements do you think would have changed your own experience as a student?
Oh, yeah, I've thought a lot about this, Gemma, as we've developed these programs and reflected on my own journey and how that, I suppose, has influenced what we're doing here. So going back to 2005, I believe it was, I actually completed the old style RCVS certificate. You're making me feel old yet again here. But back then, there were a lot less options available for structured postgraduate taught programs. And the pathway was ultimately very self-directed. And on reflection, that really required you to become very disciplined, to become self-aware of your own development needs and where the skills gaps were, and to go out and identify courses that would meet those development needs. And of course, to identify mentors who would give up their time voluntarily to help guide you through the process. And it worked well. You had to take responsibility and accountability for that. But I would be lying if I didn't say that wasn't tough trying to navigate that whilst working full time in practice. And ultimately, that was part of the reason I chose to embark on a formal residency, you know, to access effectively a much more structured training program, and ultimately to find a mentor who would give me feedback. I was working in clinic, you know, a sort of solo, and having to do that self-appraisal and not having any guidance to say, yes, you're doing that right, you're doing that wrong, you need to improve this. And that's what I was desperately in need for when I went down that route. And this is something I talk about a lot. You know, when I reflect on my specialist education, much of it was around about the way I think, the way I plan my cases, the way I make decisions, and the way I critically appraise the outcomes of the cases. And of course, there had to be a level of mastery of the technical skills given the nature of the discipline being surgery. So look, it was an amazing experience, one that I was very fortunate to have had. However, being really honest, I put a lot of personal plans and life plans on hold, and there were major sacrifices that I took both professionally and financially, personally. And I very much appreciate this pathway isn't available to all of those that wish to go down it, and isn't accessible to maybe all those who deserve and have the skills and the knowledge to actually pursue it. So ultimately at Improve, this is what we are trying to create and to some extent replicate with our new programs. So in other words, we're trying to provide that structured training pathway for those vets who either don't want to go down the residency route or who simply just love primary care practice and where they are, but still have a desire to develop their career and be the very best version of themselves in that environment. So these programs they're structured. They're much more focused on the application of knowledge, the decision-making, as I just alluded to, the critical appraisal of outcomes, and providing personalized feedback, just like I reflected on in terms of what I got during residency. But of course, they're all in a modular format where other aspects of life can continue on as normal, with perhaps slightly fewer sacrifices needed to go down this pathway. And furthermore, there's an ever-increasing range of possibilities that now exist beyond certification because, you know, as vets, we're very goal-driven and goal-orientated, and we like to see that path in front of us and to have that opportunity for progression. So there's a range of advanced programs now that you can do on the other side to further develop your career over the lifespan of your career.
Yeah, that's brilliant. So I think you've already alluded to the main parts of the new approach that we're developing, which would be the modular content and personalized feedback. And the third part will be active learning. So we'll go on and talk about that in a little while. But let's start with modular content. Why should we move away from long lectures?
Yeah, well, I guess this has been a little bit of a dogma that we've lived with in our profession for as long as we remember. You know, lectures, if we go back to our undergraduate days, I think you and I were both the same. Lectures were standard 50 minutes with a 10-minute turnaround to change classes and so on. And that's just something that we adopted and carried forward. But ultimately, breaking content into shorter themed units, typically 10, 15 minutes in duration, makes it much easier to absorb that information. And of course, to go back and revisit that later, or in the clinical situation, to take that content, if you want it as a kind of living library of a resource that in a busy clinic, you can dip into a particular lesson, watch that again, engage with it, and then bring it into your clinic. So even outside of your structured learning, it's a tool. And, you know, as humans, there's a limit to how much in-depth information we can absorb and assimilate in a single session. And we're acutely aware of that. So ultimately, we're trying to make these lessons much more bite-sized so that they can be integrated into that sort of busy professional and personal life and be more easily accessible. On a practical level, as a development team, and you understand this, Gemma, in particular, it allows us to go in and keep that material current and updated in a much more manageable way. So that we can ensure that all the content that we're sharing with our students is accurate and up to date.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the shorter lessons are certainly going to be something that we'll all find easier to navigate and even for revision purposes as well. Being able to go back and look at a specific area that you need to recap is going to be really useful.
Yeah, absolutely.
The next component I wanted to talk about was active learning. I think this is where people might notice the biggest difference. So instead of hearing how a case might be managed, you're going to actively be asked to work through it yourself. And that might be, we're going to be dissecting a tricky medical case online and trying to work out how that case evolved. Or in the soft tissue surgery program, it might be deciding the best approach to a mammary tumor using the human versus AI activity, which personally I've really enjoyed. So when you recently tried one of the reverse engineering of the clinical cases, how did you feel it compared to more traditional learning?
Gemma, I find this genuinely inspirational. You know, at a personal level, I enjoy learning about new instructional design concepts and how we can leverage learning from other and often quite diverse fields to veterinary medicine. Reverse engineering is one that is widely used in the tech industry. In fact, it's a background that many of our amazing developers come from. It was an opportunity for me to delve in to this a little bit deeper and to learn a little bit more from them. One of the amazing opportunities of working in Improve that you get to work with this diverse group of very talented people. And essentially, reverse engineering is a very well-defined process where rather than starting with the original design or the source code, these developers effectively begin with the final product and work backwards or in reverse. So they can understand the structure, the components and the behaviors, but ultimately analyze and solve problems. And when you sit and actually have these discussions with the developers and you see it in action, you can immediately start to spot the parallels of what we do in practice. So for example, in our practice, morbidity and mortality rounds, we will take a case that had a suboptimal outcome and we perform a systematic deconstruction of the case management and we take perspectives from everyone involved. Ultimately, we then reflect on what we could have done differently or better and we create actions then to avoid those pitfalls and improve outcomes in the future. So this reverse engineering is effectively that in action. And this is where the real learning happens. However, it's not easy to achieve this. It takes mentorship, someone to lead these sessions that knows and understands the format. It takes practice from doing them regularly and a structure to get the most out of it. So our aim is to try and, if you want, bottle this experience and recreate this learning environment online by employing reverse engineering of clinical cases in our teaching. So we hope not only for the learning experience to be more enriching for the individual vet, but also to equip them with the tools that they can bring back to their practice and implement for the benefit of the whole team and indeed then ultimately their patients.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's something we would all have wished that we could have access to in practice. Now, one of my favourites from the active learning activities is the error management training activities. So you talked a little bit just then about how you integrate M&M rounds into your practice. But these situations where you're put in an ambiguous scenario where you will make mistakes, and that's ultimately the point, and you reflect, learn, apply changes, really teaches students to embrace errors and use them as a learning tool and not be fearful of error. And I think we're really trying to provide a safe place for this to happen in a supportive community where learning is encouraged. And this is something I really would have benefited from, I think, as a young vet. So Aidan, you're still in practice, a proportion of your time you spend still in clinical practice, and how do you reflect on your own mistakes and foster this positive learning culture within the team that you work alongside?
Yeah, thanks for that, Gemma, highlighting my mistakes. This is a little bit like when you're asked to come and present a lecture on complications at a conference, and you kind of wonder what the decision making was in inviting you. That's difficult to know if that's an honor or an insult. But no, seriously, you're right. I'm very privileged with the role at Improve that I can combine it with clinical practice, which I think is really important in terms of remaining relevant and being at the front line of what vets and nurses are facing every day and what's applicable to their learning. And I still just get the joy of being a surgeon and dealing with a busy surgical caseload. Some of those days it feels somewhat hobby-like compared to the now day job. But there's the old saying that, you know, the surgeon who has a 0% complication rate or claims to have is unlikely to be doing very much surgery, or perhaps not looking for the complications or the outcomes. You have to be open-minded and not blinkered to seeing them. And ultimately, I genuinely believe that most of our valuable learning comes from analysing our errors. But it comes with a caveat that it's done in a constructive way, and taking considerations like psychological safety, support networks, and a no-blame culture into the mix. And you know, most errors in veterinary medicine, like in fact most professional industries, are not due to a lack of knowledge, but it's more due to ineptitude. So in other words, we make mistakes because we fail to apply what we already know rather than having an actual lack of knowledge, which I think is very apt for the veterinary profession. You know, as I mentioned earlier, we regularly within our clinic meet and have formal morbidity and mortality rounds. We engage with incident reporting using tools such as VetSafe, which is offered by the VDS. And we frequently employ informal debriefs after procedures to critically appraise what went well and what areas we could work on as a team to achieve better outcomes. And I feel this is tremendously valuable, and particularly for our younger and less experienced team members to see and understand that we all make mistakes, we have complications, or we simply can identify an aspect of a case that we could do better. But this doesn't stop us being good clinicians. In fact, I think it's on the contrary that these very behaviours and how we react in these circumstances actually make the very best clinicians and the best role models in clinic. So I would say it's incredibly rare for me to go in to review a post-operative radiograph after an orthopedic procedure and not find something that I can critique or challenge myself to improve on the next time. And these can be very minor adjustments, but it's these small gains time and time again, and the willingness to actually appreciate those and have a growth mindset that improves our performance in the long terms. You know, of course, as vets, we're very good at identifying sort of what went wrong and being quite self-critical. But it's important to have a balance and also say, well, what did I do well? Because we want to do more of that, right? And I think ultimately when we're in that situation with our interns and residents, it's these little nuggets of micro learning that take place in the X-ray room or in the operating theater that are just so beneficial. But, you know, at Improve, we appreciate that not everyone has that opportunity. Not everyone has the guidance of a mentor, and probably with where our profession is at the minute, that is something that is becoming less and less available to young and talented vets that are coming up and getting experience. So ultimately, this is why we've embedded error management training into our programs. We've worked with specialists who share our views on this. Those are the kind of specialists who want to teach in our programs. But we've also engaged with psychologists and experts in human factors to make sure that all of our training instills these principles and helps the vets handle this in a very compassionate and constructive way moving forward.
Yeah, thanks for that, Aidan. Ensuring well-being and fostering a just culture is something I'm really passionate about. And I think it nicely leads into the feedback element that we touched upon earlier. So in these courses, every learner will get access to personalized video feedback from one of the specialist tutors involved in delivering the material. And that's something that's really rare in online learning.
Yeah, absolutely. This is, I think it's really quite innovative. And it turns learning into a conversation, and not just a one-way transaction. You've got somebody that's invested in your progress who will help you work through the challenges. They'll celebrate your wins along the way, but they'll also hold you accountable for your own learning as well. This has been a huge investment for us at Improve to facilitate this platform and offer that feedback. But as I said, it is so crucial and so beneficial. But we are at a time where it's quite rare to actually get that in the workplace. Everyone's so busy. Our practice operations have become so complex that finding the time to do this day in, day out is difficult. And hopefully this program will help fill that gap in that respect.
Yeah, absolutely. We all value good feedback, and it's crucial to developing. And I think that we should also take into account, we've also got the practical days. So with the soft tissue program, for instance, we've got 10 full days of intensive practical training associated with that program. Aidan, can you, as a surgeon now, just tell us how valuable you would find that degree of practical training to your development and growth as a surgeon?
Yeah, sure. You know, as I touched on a little while ago, when I reflect back on my training, so much of it was focused on training the way you think and your decision making and so on, and that application of knowledge. But the caveat with that was, given that it was a surgical program, there was that demand to master technical skills across a broad range of areas. And there's no getting away from that in all of our practical disciplines where that's part of it. And obviously in surgery, that's a huge part of the learning curve. You know, but having access to really a world-class state-of-the-art wet lab facilities and being guided in there by passionate and experienced specialists means that our learners can get real, genuine, hands-on experience, a very supportive environment. And we try to replicate what's happening in the ORs around the globe where people are working under specialists. Across those 10 really quite intensive practical hands-on days, it's not just about practicing the techniques, but it's that constant feedback loop and refinement of skills over time that's so important. And I think that combination of, you know, being coached really cements those skills, so you can take them straight back to your practice and hopefully apply them with confidence. You know, and again, not only am I privileged to still be able to work clinically, I still have the pleasure of teaching on a number of our programs, and fundamentally I do a lot more practical hands-on teaching. And my observation when you go to those wet lab days is that most of the vets coming on those courses, they have the core skills, you know, they technically they have it, and it's often about the confidence. And what they actually need is that little bit of reassurance, a little bit of a nudge in the right direction to say, you're on the right track, you have this, you know what you're doing. And that gives them that little catalyst to start doing these things in practice. And of course, as you start doing them, that confidence grows. But then you come back for the next session and we build on that. So crucially important within this soft tissue program.
Yeah, absolutely. I think now we'll maybe move and touch on the so-called non-clinical skills, but the skills really that are actually crucial to veterinary practice, that are fundamental to your day-to-day well-being. So we're training vets not just how to diagnose, but how to communicate. And that might be with clients or with other veterinary surgeons and veterinary colleagues that we work with on a day-to-day basis. So can you give us some insight into how this is being delivered in these programs and how this is different to the consultation skills sessions that we've been used to in the past?
Yeah, sure. So at Improve, what I would say is that we are a company that like to be innovative. We invest in technology and we use it in a prudent way when it's when there's an opportunity to leverage that for the benefit of the learner. And I'm really excited about an AI sort of backed communication simulator that we have developed with a group of very talented people that is able to mimic real client personalities and challenges the vet's emotional intelligence. So we know that emotional intelligence and EI, so important in so many fields of work, but absolutely in our profession. So we know that these vets are not just managing the clinical decisions, but you're ultimately managing people, whether that's the clients that come in with their pet or indeed the team members that you're working with. So that, where we can really leverage different kind of settings from the point of view of having to communicate bad news to explain a very complex concept in a way that a layperson will understand, or trying to weigh up the pros and cons of surgical intervention versus conservative management, it can effectively tweak those different scenarios. And of course, we have a final module that will be in both the small animal medicine and soft tissue surgery program, which is called the Art of the Consultation. And it acknowledges really that clinical excellence includes maintaining your own well-being, as well as addressing other essential skills such as contextualized care, interprofessional skills, and so on. And I'm really excited to see that being embedded into all our programs across the board over time. It's such an important area because ultimately, unless we look after ourselves, we can't endeavor to look after others. And that's a really important development in our programs going forward.
Absolutely. That's a hugely positive step forward, I think, for all of these programs. Now, some of the learning methodology we've incorporated has been inspired by other high stakes professions. We talked a little bit earlier about other industries that have used some of the ALA activities. But we're looking at NASA, firefighters, air traffic controllers, and we've really examined their training programs and how they're taught. So on the surface, that might sound a bit unrelated to veterinary work, but can you maybe explain to our audience how that applies?
I guess I agree at a first sort of point. This does sound a little bit unconventional, and certainly that was my initial feeling when we started delving into this. But again, if you stop and think, there's a precedent for this in human medicine already. I've been an avid reader of Atul Gawande, who's actually written a lovely book that I encourage anybody to read called The Checklist Manifesto. And he did exactly this in his research study. He was a medical doctor, but went to the airline industry and looked at how pilots use checklists to avoid and manage error. So this is, it still feels quite innovative. But it's something that is tried and tested. And if you think about it, those industries, they've effectively spent decades refining how people make decisions in highly complex environments and under pressure. And of course, veterinary practice is becoming increasingly complex, and vets and indeed nurses need the same, whether it's maintaining situational awareness in a busy consult block, prioritizing in the case of an emergency presentation in the clinic, or one that I can relate to is, you know, leading a team in theatre when things are maybe not necessarily going according to plan. We need to reach for these skills. But of course, they're not always taught. In fact, I'd say they're infrequently taught. But they make a huge difference in the quality of the care that we can provide, and also for caring for yourself and avoiding that burnout, which is why we've worked, I guess, with these other industries to, again, extract that learning from other places and apply it to our own.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that was really well described. So who do you think these programs are for? If we traditionally think about the general practitioner certificates or postgraduate certificates, they're seen maybe as something you do between year two and five out of university. But do you think that's still the case for these courses?
Honestly, any vet could undertake these programs as they've been designed. So we'll find that early career vets will get a really solid foundation in terms of the knowledge base we'll provide and that decision-making framework and so on. While experienced vets can come in and they can sharpen their skills, they can perhaps learn new approaches, actually engage with some of these things we've just been talking about that might sound a little bit novel if they've trained some time ago. And ultimately strengthen their leaderships, because these are the people that are the mentors in the clinics and really need these skills. As I mentioned previously, whilst the programs provide knowledge content, the real focus here is on the application of the knowledge and the development of these soft skills, non-clinical skills, and ultimately training the all-round practitioner.
Yeah, I like that. It's not just another certificate, it's a way of future-proofing your career. So if you've been listening and thinking this sounds different, we've made one of our active learning activities available now for you to try. It's a perfect way to experience this style of learning and how it works in practice. And honestly, I think once you've had a go, you'll probably want to do more and be quite interested in exploring how these could help you in your career. So we've included a link here where you can have a go, see how it feels. And lastly, I'd just like to thank you, Aidan, for joining me on this discussion of these new innovative courses that are coming up in the pipeline very shortly.
My pleasure, Gemma. Always really happy to talk about this subject matter. And I genuinely think once people try this, they'll see how the approach could change the way they learn, the way they think, and ultimately the way they practice.
Brilliant. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.